This is Kabbalah 99. I'm Deborah Sophia. We have on our call today Catherine Schoenberg, a transpersonal psychologist, healer, visionary, and teacher with a private practice in New York City. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you.
Great to have you
Thank
here.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's a delight. Yeah. Catherine, you chose to be on this podcast series called Awakening and Life, which focuses on bringing spirituality right into the body. Could you comment on why you emphasize bringing spirituality into the body?
Because imagery is the language of the body, and I want to make that very clear. It's not a mental language. It's the language of the senses, right?
If you can't see it, you can feel it. So Right. Go with the feeling, yeah.
Well, you could. It's possible because I have some students who are body workers and they feel it. They can tell me the color by feeling it, right? So they don't have the Baroque visualizations that many people do have, but they have the sensations and they get the same information because it's all about information. It's about form. It's not about linear thinking. It's about form. So, and form in its largest sense, not only the shape, you know, if it's hot or cold or wet or dry or blue or pink, right? All of this affects the body and not the mental. And the body is far more intelligent than our mental. So the body knows. The body knows you know, miles away and days or futures away, right? What is really happening?
How did we shift in our society away from the knowledge of the body, away from the knowledge of the heart, into what's up here?
Well, I think it's really the revolution, the industrial revolution, the scientific revolution long before that started to say you've got to pin the butterfly to be able to understand the butterfly. Mm-hmm. So the moment you pin it, it's no longer moving, it loses its color, it loses its life. And so we can learn a lot that way. I'm not debunking that at all, but we've got to come back again to life and movement. Mm-hmm. And so the butterfly needs definitely to fly, right? That's how you know butterfly. So knowing butterfly is one thing, and knowing about the butterfly is something else.
That's beautiful.
We have to bring those two to work together in some way.
I love where you're going with this, and you're such a fascinating person, and I so appreciate you speaking with me. I just got inspired by your work and thought how perfect you would be for the blog and podcast that I'm doing.
I actually don't understand exactly what you're doing, but you have a podcast on Kabbalah?
I became a Sufi initiate and practitioner when I was 25. And I've been dedicated to that since then. Since I've studied the 99 names of Allah, you know, the divine names, divine qualities. And then I started studying Kabbalah, working with Kabbalah, the tree of life. And I realized that the Sfirot could be paired with names of Allah, mm-hmm. you know, names of God. I put the two together and it became this beautiful practice that I've shared with many people, and they've found it quite productive in creating an internal structure of Kabbalah and of the names that opens the doors to creativity and a sense of purpose and well-being. So that started it. And then the inner guidance I received was to begin writing about the Parsha. Mm-hmm. I used to teach Sunday school, you know, Hebrew school. I used to teach. So I love teaching the stories, but trying to understand it through Kabbalah and getting another view of the stories has really been a wonderful practice for me, and other people have told me they enjoy what I'm doing. So I have my blog where I'm looking at the Parsha each week, goes live on Sunday, and then I follow it with practices. I talk about it best I can from a Kabbalistic point of view. Now, I'm not like you. I haven't studied for years and years, but I studied with Rabbi David Cooper. He passed away recently, but that's who I've mainly studied.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Chabad. I've been active in Chabad for many years, and so I've learned some Kabbalah from mm-hmm. them. But all the years in Sufism, it's really not two different systems, really. They work together very nicely. And then in the meantime, the other guidance was turn my talents to this. And so this is my second season, and I'm just keep going with the interviews. And people are finding them very good. It's all about being a part of the huge transformation that's happening in humankind, which I'm sure you feel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to jump on the train and contribute in my own way.
That's wonderful. It's interesting. I teach Bible stories. Just now we're doing the plagues, actually, which I started before this plague. Because we are informed long before it happens, right? So I wrote a workshop on pandemics and why you have to stop. And then I wrote all about the plagues. I'm now teaching the whole story of Moses from the time he's in the desert and when he finally comes to Egypt as a preparation, which I call the life plan. And I'm teaching them that using both the oral tradition and the written and writing exercises. So they do it through short exercises, which is technology, if you want, right? To tap into the subconscious. And so all the exercises, not all of them, but most of them are jolt exercises, a little jolt. It's like jolt inside, which poets use actually a lot. Opens up the field of the subconscious because you can't do it mentally.
No.
So it circumvents the mental.
Good.
And brings you straight into the body. What I call the body is body, dream body, right? It's the same as soul, really.
My soul meditation practice, the one I was telling you about, does some of the similar things through using sound and and then pause to write.
This is a lineage. Colette came from a lineage that started in the 13th century in the south of France with a rabbi that most people know as Isaac the Blind. Mm. And he was blind, not because he was physically blind, but because he looked inside. So like Isaac in the Bible, who was blind, not because he was actually blind, but because he looked inside. So all the work is about looking inside and creating light. Because the moment you look inside, it's like a light goes on and you see. You don't know what you're going to see, but you see. So it's about creating that light. At first, you may be seeing things you don't like because the first things that the subconscious does is show you things that need to be cleared out. And once that is begun and started to be worked on, you start seeing a different level of the subconscious, which is the true subconscious and your soul. So you see the structures of your soul. And so the more you practice this, the more you're creating light in your body, you're creating structures that are germane to your body and to your soul. And so you're growing inner structures and what I call a palace of light inside of you. So people change very, very fast by doing this. Now, the other thing that we do that is absolutely essential is the moment, let's say the subconscious shows you that in an image or images that you're blocked and you're going down the dark tunnel and it's blocked and you can't move. The work is to enter into the image and respond to its necessities. So there's a door at the bottom, open the door. We enter into the subconscious and respond to its need. And that clears the subconscious in very, very fast.
We call that nigredo, going through that process of seeing those images, we call going into the nigredo. And then what happens is after you've cleared those out, the darkness becomes, we call it the midnight sun. It could still be black, but it's radiant black. Have you worked with that imagery at
all?
Yes. Yeah, of course.
No, I don't work with the alchemical images, but what I do is alchemy.
Right.
Because when we do that, it transforms the image. And so I'll give you an example that was terrifying of one of the students who touched on a wound she didn't know she had, but it became blood everywhere. So all her images were blood raining from the sky, blood coming from the earth. I thought I was going to lose her. And she was Jewish, so I said to her, "You're not the only one who crossed the Red Sea." And that did it. She went into the Holy Land and changed her life. And it took a second. So these things happen. The transformation happens extremely fast. And it's durable because they've seen the image. So they can grab onto the image. So whatever her negredo was, we answered it by creating a new image or by answering the necessity of whatever image she was seeing and finding a way through to something new. That's so how we work.
It makes sense that you called your school the School of Images, which you founded in 1982.
Right.
And so your school teaches the language of image for instantaneous insight and transformation.
Right.
Right. And how are images a primary global language?
Well, because it is your primary language. I mean, your sensations are your primary language. When you're an infant, you're not thinking, you're really simply feeling. And so, and you're feeling or smelling your mother or the milk or the environment, the sensations of touching are incredibly important and bring you to life. So it's all about the body sensations, right? And these create inner images. So I have an inner image of my mother. It's my sensations that are recreated on my inner screen, if you want. So those are your dream images. Your subconscious is made of images. You are made of images, in fact.
Yeah. Some philosophies say that this world is a dream.
I believe it totally.
So for our listeners, how can you explain to them through imagery that this world that we call reality versus dream life, in our culture we separate the two. How can you explain that this life is a dream?
You can't explain it. You have to experience it. It's impossible to explain because then you get into your mental and the mental will say this is not true because the scientific model is this is a table, it's hard, but if you go a little further into more modern physics, then Einstein would say, well, the table is atoms. So we can say that, but the person will not experience it. The only way is to go through the practice. If they go through the practice, they're going to begin to feel that it's malleable. What most people don't feel is that they're victims. The world is malleable. And what we see in our minds is what we're going to create in the outer world. It creates the reality. I could explain it that way. And indeed, when we work, let's say, on the inner images, let's say I have an inner image of my relationship and it's not a good one and I start repairing it in my dream time in the work that we do, then we see immediate changes in the relationship. Because I've changed my inner form, it's going to change the outer form.
That is alchemy.
Yes, of course it's alchemy, but I don't use the words of alchemy because I'm not trained in alchemy and so I do Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. I use the words of Kabbalah, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So in dream, and you know, when you're sleeping, those kinds of dreams, there isn't the same arrow of time as there is in waking life. So
that's true.
One of the challenges I've had to seeing this world as a dream, and sometimes I get a sense of it, and sometimes the challenge is if I have a favorite mug and I drop it on the floor, I can't use that mug anymore. It shatters. I can't use that mug anymore. But if I dream it, I could have the whole thing come back up, and you know, or I could, my mug, in the mug I enjoy using, is still usable. So how do you, there is a difference between the imagery we receive when we're sleeping and then what happens when we're waking because of the arrow of time.
We have seen great masters be able to reverse what is happening in life, in reality. We've seen that. We've seen people producing objects, for example, like Sai Baba, producing objects. So it's a matter of consciousness, really. The consciousness of people is very limited. And most people feel caught in what they call reality, and they become the victims of reality. When you start to clear up this idea that they're victims of reality, when they start to dream their life, to let their soul pattern come out and become predominant, they're going to see their life changing. It may not be that they're able to move objects or to create objects like certain masters have done, but they are changing their lives. And that's a mastery that is more important than reversing the broken cup, right?
Right.
So right. They will definitely find they are dreamers, not dreamers in the sense that most people think they're dreaming their life away. No, it's a powerful dreaming. And the best example in the Bible is of Joseph, right, who is called the dreamer in the Bible, and who manages to turn extremely difficult conditions into becoming the most powerful man in Egypt. So he dreams himself into that position. He dreamt it. His first dream was a dream of being at the center of the world, right? And he becomes the man at the center of the world of that time, right? So he manages to transform hard conditions and victimhood and slavery into becoming the most powerful man. So we can do that.
It raises the question about destiny.
Right.
So one point of view on that would be that it was his destiny. Another point of view was that he dreamed it. Like you made it sound like he created it. So there is a tension there between potentiality.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. So can you talk about that?
But I believe that, we cannot manifest something we haven't dreamt about. The book, The Secret, it's a lie, because the woman says, well, visualize $10,000 and you'll get them if you visualize hard enough. Well, it's not true. If your soul pattern is to become a multimillionaire, then it will happen because your soul pattern does that. So there is that. There is that you come into this world with a soul pattern and you have to go back to it and find out what it is. If you find what it is, if it becomes clear what your inner soul, your soul wants to do in this world, then it's much easier to manifest it. That's why tapping into the subconscious is the most important thing you can do, because you will find what the soul pattern wants to do, what it's meant to do in this world. And you see it in tiny children right from the very beginning. They know what they're meant to do.
Yeah. So you have exercises that help people to uncover their soul pattern?
Well, all the exercises are geared towards that. We don't have, how can I put it? The way it works is that I have multiple exercises, thousands right? And they tap, they create a kind of an aerobics of the inside, and a spiritual aerobics, if you want. And so they allow the person to begin to see what is really inside of themselves. It's great fun because it takes them a few seconds or a minute or something. They look inside, they see, and it starts to organize their perception. And eventually they're going to see, they're going to be guided by the inside first to rebalance themselves. It's an ecosystem after all, and we belong in the ecosystem, and we have an ecosystem of our own. And so they rebalance themselves, and they start now finding what their true work is. And yeah, they're going to find it by exploring the subconscious.
So can you give us an example of a short exercise?
Okay, so close your eyes and breathe out slowly, seeing the number 3. Breathe out and see the number 2. Breathe out and see the 1, tall, clear, and bright. You imagine that you are in a meadow on a sunny, bright day, and you're standing in the meadow, sensing the different scents of the meadow, the flowers, the breeze. And suddenly you turn your head 180 degrees. Now you're looking at the back, and blow out your soul as a white light, and see the soul appearing before you as a form in white light. And ask it the question that is most urgent for you today. When you've asked the question, breathe out and listen to the answer. Now breathe in your soul again, seeing the white light fill your body completely into every part of your body. And when your soul has reintegrated your body, breathe out, turn your head 180 degrees and look forward. What do you see in your future? And when you've seen, breathe out and open your eyes.
You teach a technique for dreams called dream opening. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. This language, which is the imaginal language, appears, you know, in myths, in fairy tales, and in night dreams. It's all the same language. It's a language of the body. It's the body speaking in with its sensations and telling its story, right? So if you look at a dream, a night dream, it's a window opening onto your subconscious, and it's a natural one, so it's easy for people to relate to it. And when you look at the dream, there are 4 levels to the dream. This is a system I developed to get my students to understand quickly how it works. You have 4 levels. The story level, and so we clarify the story. Tell me exactly how the person was dressed, where the person was standing. We clarify the dream. The second level is to look at the pattern, because this is how the inside works. It works by patterns. This form looks like this form, or this football fits into this net, or this piece, this puzzle fits into this other puzzle. So we look at the patterns. The moment you start looking at a pattern in a night dream, you begin to understand what the dream's about. Okay. Because the dream talks to you like that. It talks to you in patterns. It talks to you with numbers, which are also patterns. because two is a pattern. It could be a couple, it could be a duality. It's a pattern. It talks to you in word plays. For example, the dreamer is dreaming about Mr. Friedman. So that could be a word play, right? I'm giving you a simple one. So we look at all of this, and the more you see the patterns, the more it becomes clear what the dream is really trying to tell you. Third level is really about, as the secondary dream of this dream, this is what I feel about the dream. This is where I feel the dream is taking me. Because the dream is always taking us to find a better balance. Your inner body, your dream body, wants to find balance, wants to be fitting into the ecosystem and responding to the ecosystem. It wants homeostasis within itself. So it's always going to give you the route, the way to a better balance. So there's a whole ladder of dreaming, and I'm sure the Sufis have that too. But you know, we go from the nightmare, the repetitive dream, the busy dream, to the clear dream. The clear dream is showing you, is clearing the way, showing you the way. And then the great dream. Joseph had great dreams, right? Mm. They were complete. So you have a great dream, then you have dreams of light and dream of union. So there are ladders of dreaming. There's a whole ladder of dreaming. It's better to do it in a group because then you have different people showing a different perspective. Your perspective is going to be different from mine. And that elicits an opening for the original dreamer. Oh, it could be seen that way, and I could see it this way, and I could see it that way. And then whatever resonates for the original dreamer is what the dreamer is going to take away. It's very, very powerful. And finally, what the dreamer takes away is the response, his or her response to what has been said in the group. So it's based on the Pardes and on the four rabbis who go to the garden. Pshat, which is the simple story, Remez, which is the pattern, Drash, which is the interpretation, and Sod, which is the response, the secret that comes out of oneself when we've seen what this dream is really trying to tell us.
It seems to me you could look at the stories of Torah in this way.
But I apply that to all the teaching I do on Torah is like that. Mm. I teach them the Torah as a dream. So if we take Moses, for example, Moses is a part of the self. Pharaoh is another part of the self. We could take that as a whole one dream. So every part of the dream is a part of the dreamer. So the Pharaoh would be ego, and Moses is really the inner voice trying to speak up, having a hard time speaking up, needing help to speak or be heard. And so I see that, and I present it to them as a dream. Yeah.
It's really fascinating. I'm loving what you're sharing. It seems that human beings are undergoing tremendous transformation right now. What is your view on this time period that we're experiencing right now?
We have put ourselves in a corner. There's absolutely no way we're going to survive if we don't understand and glorify in every other species, and we don't love and care for our land, our trees, our birds, our elephants, our rhinos, and so forth. And we have to do that also for our other human beings. It's about, this is going to be an age of, we have to learn to respect and love and consider that every part of this world is conscious, including our bodies. Most people forget that their bodies are conscious. I see that constantly, that they don't speak to their bodies, don't ask them if their bodies want the vaccine or not, or right? They're all in their mentals and they don't ask their bodies, or they don't ask the flower that's trying to grow out of the earth what it needs. So I believe it's a huge shift in consciousness. We're just having to readjust from this cold object way of looking at things and distancing oneself to embodying ourselves again. And I think it's happening now.
It seems like your work is very much part of to support this transformation.
I hope so. I really hope so.
Through dreaming and imagery?
Right. It's very hard to get people to understand what it is because they've lost contact with their own imagery, a lot of them. Or they don't have the methodology to develop it. I do. I have the methodology to help people to develop it. It's 800 years old. It's a lineage that has been doing that for 800 years, but it's also linked far beyond that to the biblical lineage because they were training people to be dreamers and prophets. So this is a lineage that goes back more than 5,000 years. So we know it works. The students are always amazed. They come to workshops and they can see people changing before their eyes. So that's powerful.
Is there any last words of encouragement you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, really, to say that you are not victims. There is the language inside to transform and to become the best of yourself. There's a way to do that. It's fun. It's not exhausting or requiring a lot of reading or anything like that. There's none of that. It's looking in and finding out. It's revelation. So it's great fun. It's very enlivening and exciting for people to do this work. So I hope we don't forget our global language, language that everybody has. Everybody dreams.
And how could people get involved in your online classes? I'm sure everything is online right now.
Yeah, everything is online, yeah. And they just need to go to the website, the School of Images, School of Images. And then the classes are there, the contact is there. And that's the best way probably to connect with us.
Well, Catherine, it's been wonderful speaking with you. I so appreciate you coming on the call to inspire our listeners.
Really, thank you.
Providing a way forward.
Thank you.
For more mind-heart awakenings like these, you can follow us on this podcast and on our blog at Kabbalah 99. That's where we discuss the weekly Torah portion through the lens of today's challenges and offer practices to stay sane, grounded, and connected. If you like this episode, please remember to tell one friend about it. Next week, we'll hear from another thought leader who will help us to explore our experience of life and our place in this universe of wonder. Thanks for listening. I'm Deborah Sophia. See you next week.